Hi and welcome back to a new episode of What's Next? Rethinking Architecture. As always, Andrea and I are your hosts, and we can't wait for this episode to start. We have a very special guest on our show today, Mima Studio. So let's get right to it and have fun listening.
Okay, Hedwig, thank you so much for taking part. I'm glad you said yes.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're really happy having you on the show. Please introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Hedvig Scheidingstad. I'm a Norwegian architect based in Copenhagen. And around a year ago, I founded my own office called Mima Studio, which is basically short for mind and matter, which I can come back to. And then besides this, I'm a teacher at the Bergen School of Architecture and also work with some cross-field projects like writing, more artistic exploration.
To the writing and teaching part, we will come back later. And normally we start the interview always with some warm-up questions about yourself. And the first question would be, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
Well, I think maybe I have to say my morning coffee.
Really?
Yes. I think I cannot function without having a coffee in the morning. So that would be my most important favorite drink.
Okay, but that's the same
for
you, right?
I can feel you. I come from Italy. I mean, I need 5 morning coffee for start the day.
Okay, good answer. Second question, favorite hobby besides architecture?
I think it's difficult to divide the two because I kind of see architecture as this kind of cross-disciplinary field. So I think all hobbies somehow kind of tap into architecture. So all the hobbies I do, I think, reflect me as an architect. It could be like traveling or writing or arts. But maybe when I was a student, I used to do a lot of sewing projects, like find nice textiles and make them into clothing. So I think, maybe if I had more time, I would devote myself more to sewing.
Okay.
This is cool. Yeah. And where did you study? Did you study also in Scandinavian country? Or?
Yeah, the School of Architecture in Copenhagen.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you're really happy that actually your hobby is your profession.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what you always. Okay, and then, so next question. Describe your first step in becoming a self-employed.
Because you're a really young architecture office, and a lot of us would like to become self-employed probably, but it's really hard. Next to your normal work, maybe build something for yourself. So what were your first steps?
I think, first of all, it's a very good question. I think for me, it was a gradual process. So it's, of course, something I have thought about time and time again. And I've been, since I graduated, I think it's seven, eight years ago, I've been working at architectural offices. But I think basically I took the decision in the middle of Corona lockdown to go to be self-employed. And I think it was, for me, it was this process of the world being kind of turned upside down. And I kind of got to think about what do I really believe in? What creates meaning for me? So I think that was kind of the pushing point for me to take the step. Everything was a bit upside down anyways. So then I took the step of coming self-employed, and I think I always been working quite kind of multidisciplinary with teaching, with writing, with artistic projects, with office work. So it was kind of this intention of combining them more.
And were you afraid when you start, or you didn't have any doubts about this?
Of course, because I was afraid. Still afraid.
This is what all of us. You know, like the first step in, like in between be an employee and be a self-employed, it's always something that makes you scared. You really want to do, but you always think about leaving your comfort zone.
Of course. And I think, I think what you say, leaving the comfort zone, was definitely like the most, one of the most challenging aspect of it. And I think I was trying to be conscious of this. So I was also saying to myself that when going on my own, I had to be, this may sound wrong, but consciously naive and pushing myself to be an optimist, kind of believing, very much believing in this project, so to say.
And how did you get your first client?
I think the very first thing I did was open competition. So that's, of course, a fictive client. And then I'm also lucky to have a big network here in Copenhagen. So I actually also started working with another office, collaborating on projects. So that was maybe one of the first, but it was several different ones, and friends of friends. And then kind of slowly saying that I'm here and letting people know that I'm available.
This is the best kind of advertisement, I think. A good feedback from friends and people that already work with you. But if you can choose a typology of building, or which is the kind of architecture or typology of building that you enjoy more, for example, renovation or like starting from zero, if you can choose beside any client and beside any competition, what would you do?
I think I've been actually very much thinking about exact that question. And I think my response would be that it's not a particular, I'm not focusing particularly on a topology or a program or a size. I'm more interested in, let's say, the approach to the project, the narrative of the project. So I think I've always been fascinated by several scales, by several programs. So I think it's a matter on how what I can offer is rather a way of thinking and a way of working with architecture that is kind of beyond the typology somehow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you're not only an architect, you're also a teacher and a writer. What do you teach and what do you write?
If I can say it that simple, I've been teaching at Bergen School of Architecture actually since I graduated, and it's been different courses, both third year and master's program and so on. So it's following different projects and courses for each semester, and I think one of my main focuses is how to develop narratives and poetic narratives in an architectural context. So I work with different, as I said, different courses and so on, but these days with different programs and different teacher teams and so on. But this stays kind of my core intention for teaching.
Did you already sell a lot of books?
Oh, no. No, it's very much a niche. I would say the writing is, I'm working very closely with a publisher called Forlage Corridor, which is roughly translated, it would be Hallway Press or something like that, which work with prose and literature. So what I've been writing is more experimental, more prose-based and poetry-based. So it's kind of been a journey for me as well to explore what I can do with text and writing also in relation to architectural topic.
Okay, but that sounds super interesting. You should tell me how the books are called afterwards, so we can publish them also on Instagram.
They are in Danish, I would say.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, it's a niche anyway then. And may I ask you also, you talk about narrative. What do you mean with narrative in the project? You want to tell a story with the project, or you want, for example, to explain the story that is behind a particular project or a particular site? What do you mean like with this?
I think it also relates to the name of the office and how I think about architecture. So this idea of mind and matter. So I think it's very important to kind of engage ourselves through imagination and thought and critical reflection, being as thinking humans, and combine that with the physical conditions of a project. So that being the site and the program and so on. And by combining this, I think it's important to find, or I very much work with the idea of finding a narrative and working a narrative that combines the aspect of thinking and dreaming and imagining with the physical qualities of a site. And I think it's also important that a narrative can be many things. So it's not one specific narrative that is the truth, but it could be many narratives, and it could also be that we as architects have one intention, but maybe it's read by the users in a different way. And I think this is okay, but as long as we have this feeling of presence, there's something on the heart, there's something to be said.
I really agree with that. For example, for me, like, I think also about the narrative, and something that it's important is the feeling that the person that enter in a building has, for example, you know, in a school or in a concert hall, how to make feel the people, how could you give, let's say, a comfort feeling to the people that entered there as client, as visitors, as whatever. So I really agree with what you say. And sometimes, you know, we are architects, so for us it's kind of easy to understand this. But sometimes my question is always, do the people that enter in a building feel this? Can we be satisfied from what we planned and what we thought so many days and night about this? So this is what it's really interesting for me.
Yeah, I think it taps into, in at the School of Architecture in Bergen, there's this ongoing discussion of some of the concept of open form, and this is interpreted in many ways, and I don't have the kind of the correct answer to it, but for me it kind of means that a building will never be finished, so a building kind of keeps living through its users, and I don't think we can dictate what kind of feelings or experience the users will have, but I think we can encourage for participation and acknowledge that we are somehow, each of us, human beings that imagine, that dreams, that things, and if we can somehow create spaces for this, I think we can cross our fingers and hope that it will be well received.
I think it's a really good point that you mentioned there. And if you start your design process, you have a new project, how do you start? Do you have a set of rules that are fixed, and you go those points and then you start? Or is it, do you need freedom, and how do you start?
Maybe a combination of both. I think, first of all, the place is crucial, thinking context, understanding the context, and kind of working with what's already there and the conditions of the project. But I think also, and now I'm again returning to this combination of the mind and matter, which for me also refers to a way of working. So I don't know, I don't have a set of rules, but I have a high consciousness towards my own process and the creative process, And I think for me, it's important to all the time shift between analytical thinking, reflection, thoughts, and kind of analysis on the one side, and then on the other side, this kind of more intuitive doing, the kind of just drawing something, just kind of try to switch the brain off, so to say, and just do. So I try to combine these two ways, kind of the thinking and the doing, and try to combine them when I make something. So I think for me, this is important for the creative process somehow.
And for example, how do you deal with the concept? Because I know like in Europe or in US or in China, we have all different approach to the concept on a project. Do you start with a concept that is like, for example, I don't know, a particular shape or an apple or I don't know, something, or the concept for you, it's something more connected to the feeling, what we talked about before?
Yeah, I think it's more connected to as we talked about, the narrative. So I think I try to, instead of developing a concept, a form, and so on, I try to develop a narrative, which can start through analysis, understanding something, but it could also be a hunch, just something that I think is interesting.
Okay.
And then I try to allow myself to go through that. It could also be to include writing in the process, to kind of write my way into something. But it is a gradual process, and I think I always try to work with form and material and so on in relation to that narrative that I want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say all of your projects have like a red line that somebody else could say, okay, this is a typical Mima?
No, I don't think so. First of all, I'm as you said, I'm a young office. So my portfolio is not that big yet. So I think it's hard to find the kind of this kind of very clear red thread to it. But I also have, I don't know if I have an intention of making something that looks the same, because I think that each project should be unique in its own way. Mm-hmm. Each project should have its own voice.
So this is a really interesting demo, because for example, we cannot say which is the right approach, but personally, I never understand if it's the right road is to building and design something that has a clear, let's say, narrative or like a clear signature, or as you say, every project is different. Because I don't know if we talk about, Le Corbusier, just a really naive example and a really like classical example. I mean, in those projects, you always understand who is the architect. But now in our days, we have so many new materials, so many new detail and approach, that it's also hard to find this red line, let's say.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm not trying to pursue that, but I am, of course, trying to have some values that... Mm-hmm. are important to me, that I hope shine through in the projects that I do. Yeah. I try to kind of invite for participation. This book that I wrote recently, it's made on transparent paper, so you would read the words in an endlessly different combination. So I think it's with that project, I think it's highly fascinating how each reader would read this book differently. And I hope for the same.
I absolutely want to see it.
And I hope for the same in the project as well, that it will be possible. I hope that people will come in and participate. And I also think that kind of that it creates some sort of wonder or creates presence.
And what means being an architect for you? relating topics like climate change, overpopulation, hunger. What do you think is your, as an architect, how do you deal with this? And how do you prepare for all of those topics that are actually already there or here, but nobody really talks about it? And we still build single family homes. And I don't even know if this is up to date or if a single family house has future. How do we do?
There's many, many questions in one. I think of course the most crucial aspect today is the climate crisis, and I almost think it's almost impossible to be an architect today and not consider climate change in one way or another, or how we deal with this as architects. And I think my way into it is that I think this combination of reflecting on our built resources, thinking and reflecting on what we're actually doing, and encouraging this consciousness towards built resources. And I think that encouraged what I call a poetic sustainability. Mm-hmm. So I think sustainability is somehow more than just numbers and checklists and kind of this technical aspect, kind of this greenwash aspect, but it's more kind of encouraging a way of being in the world where we do think holistically, where we do think of consequences and on how we act and how we live. I don't know if that answers the questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what type of materials would you choose then? Or do you think if we look into the future, we only print 3D concrete houses? Or how do you think the design process will change with artificial intelligence, for example? How do we have to prepare ourselves for this?
I think, as a general comment, I think we will always have the need for something physical. So I think in relation to artificial intelligence, I think it's this. It can help in some many ways, but it can never be a substitute for like the real presence.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. So I think it could help us, and it could make us be more flexible in the processes we do. It can, of course, rethink how we explore materials and so on. But I think it's interesting when they launched this kind of Kindle or digital books some years ago or many years ago, at the same time you saw this huge explosion of small publishers that really emphasize the physical reading experience. Mm-hmm. So I think there's always this kind of desperate need also for us to be physically present. And I think for me, where the digital technology and artificial intelligence is really, really interesting is when it combines this kind of digital realm with the physical. For instance, as you say, when it comes to materials and 3D printing and so on. And yeah, I'm very fascinated by the combination.
So you don't think that we don't have to enter a church anymore for this atmosphere or for the smell or something? You don't think that artificial intelligence also can give you the smell and the feeling of actually entering a church, for example?
No, and of course the technology becomes at one point so good that it can mimic this, but I think it can never replace the real experience. But I think it can, for instance, going into that church, if it's the site we're working with or something, it could be a tool for us to mm-hmm. understand a place and to work with that place. But but never replace the real condition.
Okay, so you don't see us all in little concrete boxes with our virtual reality glasses on, just going wherever we want and not leaving our homes anymore in the future?
No, I don't. I think there will be a counter reaction to okay. that. I think people will really go and be present. But of course, this, the possibilities with working with augmented realities and so on, where you have possibility to go into a, for instance, a building before it's built, and you can show the client the project basically before it's there. I think that's mm-hmm. huge potential.
So you see there. Positive and negative side about this.
Definitely, like the combination of a lot of potential, but also to be used carefully. Yeah.
And now, in terms of COVID, how do you imagine the future working place and living place? Or do you think working and living will be combined in the future, like now home office? Or
I think, yeah, it taps a bit into what we were talking about before, but I think it creates definitely more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So we are able to have conversations across borders and so on, and work in a whole different way. We're able to sit in a cabin in the woods and do our work and have client meetings, or we kind of make ourselves independent of place very much so. But I must also say that having had, for instance, digital teaching for quite a while, I was very happy when I could go back and also see the process kind of physically. So I think it will create more flexibility at the one side and more opportunities. But on the other side, hopefully it would also make us cherish the physical encounters even more. So maybe we have a higher demand for our physical situations, mm-hmm. because they become a contrast on what we have digitally.
Okay, good answer.
Mm-hmm.
So home office is a topic for you?
I mean, she's just started. She's in home office in her own office, so it's the perfect situation.
I'm actually in a co-working space.
Do you already have employees? Do you already have employees, or you do everything by your own and you're looking for someone for help? Or
I'm having an intern that's about to start. Mm-hmm. So right now, I don't have any employees, but I'm also working. I love working with people. So I'm sitting in a shared co-working space, mm-hmm. with some people I used to study with. So we have a daily kind of communication with each other, and I'm also collaborating with different architects. I enjoy that kind of dialogue.
Change and dialogue,
Yeah. Very much.
When you say you work like in cooperation with other architects, what do you mean? Like you as a physical person with an office, you do partnership with other architects, or like you participate to competition together, or
both cases. I have some collaborations that I've done on competitions, and then there's I'm doing a summer house with the office called Tegnestuen Lokal, mm-hmm. which is some friends of mine actually. So it's also a part of starting up to be able to kind of have projects in that way. And also, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so. And do you mostly project and design something for Scandinavian country? Or do you also like have the opportunity to project something, I don't know, in south of Italy, in Africa, or somewhere else?
I would love to do projects in both south of Italy and Africa. But at the time being, I'm working mainly in Denmark, but I'm also sketching a minor project both in Norway and Scandinavia. Oh, sorry, Sweden. So I'm kind of focusing very much on the Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, but the process you are in sounds super exciting and interesting. And maybe at some point we're also in this process, but it's a long way, I think. And how do you think the new normal will look like? When we're done with this COVID, if we're ever done with this, how do you think the new normal will look like? Will we as human beings behave differently? No hugs anymore?
I think, first of all, I'm wondering if there will be a normal. Maybe we'll get used to also, again, returning to the climate crisis, maybe we'll get used to not having a normal, that that the world is changing. But at the time being, when we talk now and the world is somewhat closing down a little bit again, I'm very much hoping that we'll come back to hugs and more normal everyday life soon. I really miss it.
But for example, now when I'm not wearing my mask, it feels like strange. So the mask actually became normal in the public transportation or whatever. And this is scary that something like this can become the new normal. And yeah.
But at the same time, I'm fascinated about how surprisingly quick I at least got used to the mask. And then there was no mask. So I got very quickly used to that. Yeah. And now I'm used. So maybe if I look optimistically on it, maybe we can learn that we can do changes and we can adapt to those changes also in relation to think differently on how we act in relation to the climate crisis. So maybe we can hope for us being more adaptable for good changes in the future. I'm trying to look at it positively.
Yeah.
No, but that's good. We are, okay, now we have the last question already. What is architecture for you personally?
Oh, that's a big question. I think recently I went through a box of old stuff in the attic. And I find all of these books that I made as a child. So I kind of realized that I always had this, and there was small stories and fictive worlds somehow. So I think I kind of realized that the story has always been something that fascinated me. Really kind of my entrance point towards architecture. And I think also, I grew up with a father that's a psychiatrist working with mines and a mother that's a geologist working with stones.
So what a combination.
So I kind of believe that a personal approach for me in architecture is that it's lying somewhere in between.
This is really cool.
And now you're the combination of your mom and your dad.
hopefully not, let's say. It's not that simple, but I think it's fascinating to think about architecture in this way. So it is us as thinking human beings on the one side, and then kind of the material, the stone or the tree, or kind of this idea of the materials on the other side, and somehow in the middle. Architecture arise
in between psychiatry and geology.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure, and thank you again for inviting me.
This was this week's episode. We really hope you liked it as much as we did, and thank you so much again to Mima Studio for taking part. If you have any comments, please let us know. Critic is always very welcome. And till next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao.